Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Trotten's been raiding off my cup. Pink via deck for most to see Kalein far vein to up. Gate mir kein's a flint. Die Trotten.
Hey everyone, welcome to Kill Me Now with Judy Gold. I'm your host, Judy Gold, and this week we have part one of my interview. It couldn't be better timing. My interview with Tristan Snell, who wrote the book Taking Down Trump, 12 Rules for Prosecuting Donald Trump by someone who did it successfully. And it's a fantastic conversation and really fascinating. And you'll find out why he seems to get away with everything, even though, you know, this week, I'm recording this Sunday night, so I don't know what happened at the trial yesterday, but I know he can't talk, so that's one positive thing. Anyway, wanted to let you know that I just added a date to my calendar, the first weekend of May, May 3rd and 4th, I'm going to be in Rochester at the Carlson in Rochester, New York. Get your asses there. Go to my website. Yeah, go to my website and you can buy tickets. Or I'm sure, you know, I've posted it on Instagram. But it looks like a really great club. The Carlson, Rochester, New York. 50 Carlson Road in Rochester. So I'm excited for that. So that's May 3rd and 4th. So get your asses there. Also, before we start the interview, just a few things happened this week. Fascinating things. First of all, bye-bye, OJ. Take care. Enjoy hell. But, you know, OJ, I get it why, you know, there's such a racial divide when it comes to OJ, because I think, you know, he got away with it. And I think a lot of people who are treated like shit. I think for a lot of African Americans or people of color, you know, this was someone beating the system finally. And I get it. I get it. I get the anger. And, you know, I think people have, I watch Trump beat the system. I want to fucking punch his fucking face in. So anyway, sayonara. Also, I wanted to say, fuck tax. I hate taxes. I really hate taxes. My father was a tax attorney. My father wrote the tax laws for the state of New Jersey. And I really, I hate paying taxes. I hate it. But I should be happy that I have to pay them because that means I make, shut up. Also, I am really, you know, it was a really tough and anxiety provoking weekend with what Iran did in Israel. And it shows that Israel can defend itself, did defend itself, and should be able to defend itself. And we had some unlikely, Israel had some unlikely friends. I don't know if I'd use the word friends, but supporters. And it's funny that, you know, a lot of these people who are, they say, I don't like the term, as you know, pro-Palestinian, because that makes an assumption that people who are Zionists or who believe Israel has a right to exist and defend itself aren't pro-Palestinian, don't want Palestinians to have a decent life, which isn't true. So I'm going to refer to them as the pro-Hamas, the Hamas supporters, the people who defend Hamas. Those people were cheering for Iran. That is how sick people are. Iran, who created these jihadists, who funded Hamas, who hate you. Yeah, so people, of course, were really just, I knew it was going to happen, that they'd be like, oh, yeah, go Iran. You're just so fucking dumb. So fucking dumb. It's crazy. And I'm hoping that the 7-year-old Israeli Arab girl who got hit by shrapnel survives and is okay. And my heart goes out to her parents and family and her. So, God, it's just fucking bad news all the time. All the time. So, you know, hopefully we'll have some good news when it comes to Trump this week. But anyway, so that's all I have to say right now. I really had fun. You got to get this guy's book, Tristan Snell's book. He's a lawyer, and he prosecuted the Trump University case, which the details are, it's fascinating. You cannot believe what these victims went through. And he's just a great guy, and he's so smart. And get his book, Taking Down Trump. It's great. Anyway, so that's it. Praying for peace and some common sense, and for people to shut the fuck up who don't know what the fuck they're talking about. It's just infuriating. But that's it. That's all I have to say right now. Thank you for tuning in, and sit back, relax, and enjoy part one of my interview with the one and only Tristan Snell. Hey, everyone. I am thrilled, excited, beyond. This is one of my least favorite and most favorite topics. And this book is amazing, Taking Down Trump. I don't know if you can see. And I have its author, Tristan Snell, on. And fuck, this is, thank you for this book, first of all. Everyone needs to get this book. It specifically talks about, it's the subtitle is The 12 Rules, but the information in here it's mind-boggling. It's sad. I mean, some of it is just fucking sad that we live in this country with that motherfucker. And I'm going to be cursing a lot during this podcast. So everyone, I've been trying to work on my cursing, but I have rage that is beyond. And I think, Tristan, first of all, thank you for being here.
Thank you. Yeah, I will try to help.
Thank you. I mean,
or not. I don't know. I mean, I might not be able to. I'll see what I can do.
I have so many questions, and thank you for writing this book. You did successfully take down Trump and prosecute Trump, but not without hurdles that are unbelievable. They're unfucking believable.
Yeah, they are. It's awful.
And the one thing I was like, oh, when do I tell him this? When do I even start with this? But so you, just so everyone knows, you were assigned to the AG's, the Attorney General of New York's Consumer Protection Agency or division. And your second day there.
Yeah.
They give you this Trump University case.
Yeah. And my first impulse was to stifle a laugh because I was like, you've got to be kidding me. He had a university. I didn't know. I think it had gotten some attention in the media and whatever, but I, you know, back then I didn't sit around paying attention to whatever Donald Trump was doing.
Right.
I did not care.
Right.
And I did not watch, I never watched The Apprentice or Celebrity Apprentice.
Same.
It was not my cup of tea. I just, you know, he was a guy that was on TV and in the tabloids all the time. I didn't really, but I just thought it was, I was just like, you gotta be kidding me. He had a university. And at first it was really, we really truly did take, I mean, he has painted all of this now as being like, well, these prosecutors are out to get me. It's a political vendetta, blah, blah, blah. The thing is that at no point I can pretty much guarantee this is true for the AG's office today. But I can definitely tell you that when I was there 10 years ago, at no point were we sitting around being like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to take down that Donald Trump guy.
Right.
Like, we're going to find something on him. No, this came to us because the state education department for the state of New York referred us the matter because they had gotten complaints and had noticed that it's like, he's calling himself a university and he's not legally able to do so.
Right.
And there had been some complaints directly to our office from consumers. And that's why, and we were doing a bigger investigation into for-profit ed, which is a whole other topic we can talk about sometime,
right.
But that's a whole other beast of its own at a bigger level. But we were actually, Trump U was actually one of five schools that we were looking into.
Really?
Yeah,
what were the other four?
Yeah.
Do you remember the other four?
One of them was Corinthian, which has now been shut down. And our case was one of the cases that really helped bring them down that a couple of my colleagues worked on. They did a great job there. The others, I would have to go back and hit up my old colleagues and ask them which ones those were. I can't remember off the top of my head. But
can you tell people, first of all, did you were assigned to this consumer protection. What kind of law did you want to practice? What were you?
Oh, I mean, I was very happy. I know I had applied to that particular bureau. I knew that that was the vacancy, and I definitely wanted to be there. I am I long have been somebody who really cared a lot about consumer protection. So for me, I had a notion in my head that I wanted to do some government enforcement work of some kind, and consumer protection was pretty high up there for things that I would have wanted to do. It turns out that if I could have waved a magic wand and I could have gotten whatever job I wanted in a prosecutor's office, I think that probably consumer protection would have been in the top three. I think number one might have been public corruption, though.
I love
where
you.
You're going,
I love you. You're just
yeah. That's
justice.
What I really, really wanted to do. That's what I really, really wanted to do. To be honest,
right.
But consumer protection was probably second or third, and you know, it just worked out that I ended up doing consumer protection. Lo and behold, of course, I basically was doing some preemptive and unfortunately not quite sufficient public corruption prosecution indirectly. Sadly, it didn't work. You know, it didn't stop him from getting
right.
in. But you know, I think if we have enough. If we have enough shots at him, I think that he is eventually going to get taken down.
Oh, it's you know, there's law and there's karma. Where do you think?
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. I know. Hey, everyone. I love our sponsor, fast growing trees. I don't know if you've noticed when we show the clips of the podcast that I have a new best friend in my office named Avi. And where did I get Avi? At Fast Growing Trees. Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the United States with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the United States of America. And I am a happy customer. I love walking in this room and seeing my fig tree, Avi. I talk to Avi. I love it. It makes me happy. And you need plant life in your house. And I have another plant on my piano in the other room. I'm just telling you, it makes your home so much more of a home. So thank you to Fast Growing Trees. They have everything you could possibly want. They have fruit trees. They have palm trees. They have evergreens. They have houseplants and so much more. And I'm in an apartment in New York. Okay? I don't even have a yard outside. And it's changed my life. Do it. Go to Fast Growing Trees. And whatever you're interested in, they have it. They have the perfect fit for your climate, for your space. You can call them and ask them how to take care of your plants. They have so much information. And it's so easy to order online. Your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. They have a 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee. They have free plant consultation forever. Forever. And I have a new best friend, Avi. I love you, Avi. So do it. You don't need a yard. You don't need a lot of space. You just need to make your home a beautiful place. And that's where Fast Growing Trees comes in. This spring, Fast Growing Trees has the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. fastgrowingtrees.com, code JUDYGOLD. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Do it. You're welcome. Where do you think your sense of justice, of wanting justice, comes from?
That's a good question.
When you were a child, I mean, representing the victim.
It goes back pretty far. Like, I would say that I would say a decent number of the fights or whatever I would get into as a kid probably had to do with like somebody else. That somebody else was the one who was getting bullied or something like that, and I got involved. And I also think that I was a total like politics and government and law nerd
from
at a
very young
early
how,
age.
First of all, I needed you to be at my school because the shit I had to put up with. But what got you into that? What, you know, at such a young age?
I mean, I think that my folks had something to do with it, but I also just think it was some kind of innate thing. I don't know. Like, I definitely had that, like, I have that, like, super nerd about, like, rah-rah USA government, American history, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
It's like the, if anybody's watched Parks and Rec, it's basically like the Leslie Knope thing.
Right, I got that.
Like when I first watched that show, I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing.
Yeah.
But it's basically like, it's like the characters on that show.
Yeah.
Like that. And here's the thing. That's a lot of the people that are in government. It's actually true.
But that's,
and you know, why? Because otherwise they wouldn't work in government because it pays shit.
Yeah, it does.
It doesn't pay well.
But then,
so unless you truly care about that, there's some people that are there and they're punching a clock and they're collecting their pension.
Right.
But even they care, even if it's kind of muted and they've just been in it for long enough that they're just there and they've been doing the same job
right.
for 30 years. But God bless them, because they really, even those, they do care. People, they really truly care. And the right-wing grifters and fascists want to call that the deep state, because that's the thing that's standing between them and total control of the governmental apparatus, and then carving it up into oligarch-sized chunks that they can hand out to their allied business cronies. Like, that's what they're,
and
that's what the overall grand scheme
right.
thing here is. But it's all of those, it's all of the government nerds are the reason why, or a lot of why this hasn't happened yet. It truly is true.
Right. I feel like we have lost the idea of what a public servant is. Like, I think Biden is a public servant. I think he has always been a public servant.
Yeah, I do.
And there are a lot of people who I feel like, okay, I feel like Obama was a public servant. I feel like there are some Congress people and elected officials who are public servants. And then there's the fucking assholes. And I don't understand, Tristan, like this idea of oligarchy and fascism, how you grow up in this country and are attracted to that. I don't understand where that comes from. Is that money? Is that, I don't get it.
I do think it's sort of tribal grievance. You know, I really feel like we've gotten this sort of like infection that has just run rampant,
right?
In a certain segment of the population, where folks just feel like they're being hard done by, and that somehow, you know, the elites have shut them out. But a lot of it is, I actually don't think it's genuine. I think for most of the people that are really like the visible avatars of all this shit, it's not genuine. There's no actual genuine.
Right.
They're using the tribal grievance as a tool to manipulate the base into supporting them.
Right.
The people who are actually visibly doing this are craven, cynical grifters who probably don't believe half the shit they talk about. But they actually have no views of their own, really, except to line their own pockets. And Donald Trump is very much typical of this. Like, he got into office to line his pockets and to satisfy his own ego. You know, it's not because he actually had deep seated ideological commitments.
Absolutely.
He doesn't.
Anyone who thinks that is not. Yeah.
No, but these people do, right? That's the problem.
I
is that these people
it.
Do,
yeah.
But they've been conned.
Right.
They've been conned. But, like, you know, Anne Applebaum writes about this in her book that I'm going to forget now the name of it, but like her really terrific book, it was A Twilight of Democracy. It's something of that.
I might be butchering
the title.
Right.
But she writes about it specifically with regard to what's been going on in Poland.
Right.
Now, of course, that has started to look a little bit better with Tusk getting into office again, and the pro-democracy coalition managing to like get a majority in the parliament again. And so that's looking better. But she uses Poland and Hungary a little bit as case studies, because that's her area of expertise is Eastern Europe, to talk about how one of the things she talks about that I thought was really, really resonated for me was that when you have these kind of far right movements, they tend to be like a lightning rod for a lot of like third rate, fourth rate, never was or has been kind of folks to kind of come crawling out of the woodwork and say, now I have my chance to get into office. And they like come crawling out. It's like you've invited like a bunch of termites into the foundation of the country, and all of a sudden they're just like, nah, they're eating away at it. And they, these are people that never would have had a shot at power in a normal functioning party system. But once they have their opening, it creates a chance for a lot of these like folks that never would have been able to get that far are suddenly like crawling in there. And she talks about that at a good bit in her book. But I think that that's what we've got going on here. I think we've got a lot of folks that have seen their opening and now they're jumping in. Unfortunately, Trump inspired a bunch of other fraudsters and grifters. That's how we have Lauren Boebert. That's how we have George Santos and Marjorie Taylor Greene. That's where these people,
and
more of them keep coming up all the time.
Right.
Like, how does a guy like Mike Lawler get into office when his previous claim to fame was that he went to the Michael Jackson trial and got thrown out of the courthouse because he was mocking and harassing one of the victims?
Right.
Like, how do you get from that to Congress?
Right.
Because Trump made it okay.
Right.
And now he's created this playbook of shameless grifting and a base that you can identify to like go get your little tentacles into to go fool these people into giving you money. But these people, George Santos doesn't have a belief.
Oh,
he doesn't care about
not.
All of these. There's nothing there. There's nothing there. He's just in it for Lauren Boebert doesn't have any beliefs. except that this was a way for her to escape whatever obscurity she was in and what obscurity she's about to fall back into after her political career ends pretty soon.
Right.
And same for Santos.
Right.
But that's the problem that we've got.
So when you were given this Trump University case,
yep.
You know, it's funny because Eric Schneiderman, this is my Jew bell. I should have sent it for Anne Applebaum too, but whatever. So Eric Schneiderman and I went to the same synagogue, and I remember seeing him, and my neighbor was close friends with him. But anyway, I remember seeing him at synagogue on Rosh Hashanah, and it was 2000, it was 16, I think. He resigned in 17, I think, or 18. So maybe it was 2000.
It was 18.
Yeah, so 2017. And we were walking out together, and I said, listen, we got to get rid of Trump. I mean, this is after your thing. I said, I can't sleep. I can't, you know. And he's like, my whole goal in life is to get, that is the one thing I need to do. And I'm reading this book and I'm like, you're in up his sphincter.
Yeah, no, I mean, here's the thing. I will give credit where credit's due. We got him to the right outcome.
Right.
Maybe not for the right reasons, but there's a lot of people that even with the work that we did to convince him, and even with the missteps that Trump made, they still just would have been like, nope, not going to do it. Not going to do it. Not going to piss off that powerful person. And look, the good news there was that I don't know if it was really what other folks upstairs at the office were trying to do, but I think they managed to channel Schneiderman's ego to a place where it was willing to challenge Trump's ego. But that's really what ended up happening there. There you go. And then after the fact, it was like, oh, I was going to do this all the time.
Yeah,
it's
right.
My life's work. It's like, really? Yeah, there's pretty much there. I don't know a single person who worked in that office during those years who would say that. Like, that was categorically untrue. Like, everybody who was at that office knows that he had to be dragged kicking and screaming to do that case up until the very end. And then he was like, fuck them.
Right.
We're going. And like, you know, that's and then look, once he got there, he got there.
Right.
And he was like,
but it took a while.
And it took a while. It took a whole year plus that we lost, and that made our case weaker, as I talk about in the book, like, because we have the statute of limitations issue.
Right.
And the longer we waited, the worse that got. So it was like, ugh. But we got there.
So,
you know.
Hey, everyone. You know what I just did? I tore, I poured, and I enjoyed a packet of Liquid IV. Because I love Liquid IV. Liquid IV is a major part of my life. And I just worked out with my trainer, and I had a delicious lemon ginger Liquid IV. That one has a little extra. That has a little green tea in it, and so that's a little caffeinated. So I enjoy that because I needed it today. And, you know, it's getting warmer out, and what does that mean? Summer. Oh, God, please come. It can't come soon enough. And that means you have to hydrate. And that's what Liquid IV does. It hydrates you with benefits like electrolytes, vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients. And it has 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients in one little stick. And that's why Liquid IV is the number one powered hydration brand in America. Okay? And I love it. I use it every day. Ben's basketball team uses it. It is a science-backed formula that works. It keeps you hydrated. And they have sugar-free. They have sugar-free packets in white peach, green grape, raspberry melon, and lemon lime. Okay? I didn't do the sugar-free. Okay. But Elisa does the sugar-free. So what are you going to do? You're going to stay hydrated because it's very, very important. And Liquid IV has been a longtime sponsor, and I love them, and they are a quality product. And this is what you're going to do. You're going to turn your ordinary Can't speak. Turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's JUDYGOLD. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, can't even say my name, at liquidiv.com. Got it? You're welcome. Can you describe, so you get this case, you're perplexed by the lack of support you're getting from the AG. Like at, there are times in the book you're like, wait, what? Like I did all this work. Wait, what are you fucking saying to me? Like, so you'd bring it up, everyone's on the same page, and then you go up to Schneiderman's office and... Or someone gives you a message
close to him. I mean, we actually I never met with him face to face while this case was going on.
No way.
Now, by the way, actually, I should have. Why didn't I put that in the book?
I know.
I can't believe it. But here's the thing, like that actually does tell you something, because I don't know that that would have been true for every elected in that position.
Right.
Like, I don't think that it would have been, because it's like, wouldn't you want to hear it from the horse's mouth?
Right.
Like, wouldn't you want to go? Like, if I were the AG, I would actually want to talk to the line attorney who was the one really doing the work and find out exactly from him or her, like, what was going on.
Right.
You know, rather than hearing it as a game of telephone through, like, four people. But we never got to meet with Schneiderman. We were meeting with the first deputy AG and or his chief of staff. So you have the first deputy is the one who then runs all the lawyers.
Right.
And then the chief of staff runs the political office, the press people, whatever, the policy people, like those are the political side of the office. So there was usually a combination, one or both of those people would be the people that we would go upstairs to meet with. And then we would be told, yeah, we don't think you guys have enough evidence yet.
My
it's just
God.
Like, what, how much more do you think we need? And and then it was Carla, my division chief, who really just, she was the one who carried it across the goal line upstairs. Like, she was the one who prevailed on all of that. And there were a number of other people that were, there were a lot of other dynamics going on inside the 25th floor, but
it's crazy.
But that's what was going on there. Yeah.
You take this and you're in your office and you think, I'm going to call. How am I going to get my information? I'm going to call the people who went to fake fucking Trump University.
Right.
And I'm going to say, you got to talk to tell everyone about those phone calls and how long they lasted. And fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, each call, some of them were more like 20, 30 minutes, but some of them were like an hour and a half.
No. Oh my God.
Not a joke. And then there were follow-up calls later with each of the people that had agreed to do an affidavit. So then we basically took what they had said to me. I took copious notes, and then I would basically boil that into something where it's like the affidavit format. If any of you have ever seen that, or you are a total junkie about these things and you go looking around on court websites, you know, they have that very standard format. It's like, my name is so-and-so and I live in blah, blah, blah. And this is my, you know, this is my statement to the best of my knowledge, blah, blah, blah. And then you basically tell your story in very plain declarative statements in chronological order is how you want to do it, because you want to make it really, really easy to digest as part of the court record. This happened, then this happened, then this happened, then this happened, then this happened. That is it. And then you sign under penalty of perjury. So it's really just making a more organized statement using their words as much as humanly possible. Right. And so I
are you allowed
prepare.
To record these?
I didn't. I could have, but I didn't. I just took really good notes.
Wow. You are.
I probably should have. Actually.
Yeah.
We didn't. It's not like it was just like, oh, I've got it on my special computer here. I'm going to hit the button. It would have been like, I'm taking like a crappy old tape recorder and sticking it next to the phone and putting them on speaker. Like, we literally had. Do you know, like, do you remember, like, whatever the telephone was that you would have had on a desk?
Yes, of course.
In about 1988?
Yes.
That's the phone we had. It was a beige push-button phone.
Oh my
God. Where the button kind of stuck a little bit, like you had to push it a little bit. It was a little bit crunchy. Yeah, the buttons were a little bit crunchy. Yeah, that was what I was on. So it would I would have had are to come up with kind of a weird.
Are you the only one on the call?
What do you mean?
Are other people listen? Are any of your assistants listening or any paralegal? Nothing.
No.
Okay, so it's just you.
No, no, no.
On a fucking 1980.
No. Oh, what? Oh, sorry. I thought you were talking about now.
No.
I'm actually alone in my studio. No. Oh, I mean, back then, I have a bigger look. I run a law firm now. Okay, we're not that big. We have like a dozen people.
Right.
I have more people helping me now.
Than
I
did at the
when
AG.
I was running that case. Oh my God, by like a large number. Like, oh my
ridiculous.
God. This is really laughable. It's like, oh, my paralegal. Oh, that would have been fancy. No. We didn't have those. Like there were one or two assigned to the bureau
that you could
get help from occasionally. But I did 99% of the work that I did on this. It was either me or So one of the little hacks that I did, I talk about this in the book, is that I volunteered to take over leading the Bureau's intern program.
Wow.
Because, I wanted to help out and I wanted to do my part in the office.
Yeah, but you wanted help too.
But I also wanted to pick the people.
Right.
And then I wanted to pull them onto my
matters,
which is exactly what I did. So I made sure that I always had like the best help out of the intern pool because I needed help.
Right.
Because this was like, we had a lot to do and we didn't have a lot of time. There were bursts where we had to do just a lot in a very short amount of time. At that point, when I first got handed the case, nothing. I had no other support.
Wow.
Nobody else had been assigned to it. It was me alone in my office with nothing. And none of the, there were three or four assistants for the whole bureau. So there were like 14 attorneys. There were like three or four assistants, one or two paralegals, and that's it. And you could get help from some of those people occasionally if you were one of the assistant AGs. But by and large, you were kind of on your own. So,
and this is a huge case.
I mean, that. And the thing is, that office, think about what they've done now with this. With this big, I'm still going to call it the $464 million case.
Well,
I don't care what the frickin' appellate division says. We can talk about that.
Yes.
But like, I just about lost it on live TV yesterday when they announced that. I was on MSNBC when that news broke. And I just about,
how
I had to,
does
I was
that
sitting
happen?
There.
How the
I was
fuck?
Sitting there. Yeah. The main thought in my head was like, apropos of that, the main thought in my head was like, don't curse on live TV.
Right.
Don't curse on live TV. Because I was just like, the steam was coming out of my ears. I was just like, I cannot believe that they freaking did that. But anyhow,
you talk about that, Trump has this way. Well, he did. He got these prosecutors in his pocket with promise and elected officials with promises of donations like Eric. This is a division that is fighting consumer fraud, and they are committing fraud in a way by changing their letting him manipulate them.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's just like we basically had the fox wasn't quite in the hen house, but like the fox was giving the chief rooster money or not. Well, literally, because as it's true in the book, and this has been known for a while, but what I tried to do is to take a lot of things that have long been known,
right,
but piece them together in the right way, which by the way, that's what good litigation is too. Is a lot of times you're taking things that actually are already out there and just assembling them in a really good narrative.
And telling a story.
If you can try to get it.
Yeah.
And telling a story. So what I try to do is like, we've long known about all the things that Trump has done to conveniently time promises of political support or flat out checks that just happen to coincide with the evaporation of investigations by that elected official. It's happened multiple times. I just try to talk about them back to back to back to back and then say, here's the pattern, or do you see a pattern? Because I certainly do.
Right.
You know, draw your own conclusions. But yeah, one of the things in there was that Trump's lawyer throughout most of this, up until the point that we finally sued, was this guy, Avi Schick. And he, I was going to say, yeah, I think you probably were going to ring that bell. Avi was not only Trump's lawyer at the time, but unbeknownst to us, it only came out later, he was actually one of the main people leading Schneiderman's fundraising for his reelect.
That's right.
At the same time. So if we want to talk about, like, the system is rigged, you know, that's what it is. Like, you know, like, it can get rigged with Democrats too. Like, the corruption can happen there. And, like, that's just slimy.
It's so slimy.
It's so slimy. Like, why? Like, why was that what we were fighting? Yeah. So literally you had, so of course the AG was going to pick up Avi's call because Avi was one of his money guys. Helping bundle for him.
And
so, like, of course.
Making your job even more difficult. And you.
Oh, yeah. So we had no, like, the fact that we got this done at all, like, that's what I try to say here is, like, this case should have died, like, five times, like, seven times. Like, it was, like, the fact that we got the case where it went is a freaking miracle. Because we really, like, there were so many things that we were working up against. So I do think it's an interesting case study. Because we see a lot of different flavors of problem inside, I think, some of these other offices. And I don't think it's been corruption. I think it's been more a species of, I sort of call it kind of political institutional timidity.
Right.
Like, don't piss off the power ticket. Right. Like, don't, you know, like, let's just keep our head down and just work on getting reelected. Like, and the problem is that if you do that too much, you'll never take on anybody that powerful, and you're not really doing your job.
Right. Thank you so much for listening to part one of my interview with Tristan Snell, the author of Taking Down Trump. Isn't he great? Isn't he great? He's so great. And more to come. And it's just, I can't believe people get away with this shit. And I can't believe how many shitty people there are in this world. It's just, and they're getting shittier. Shittier and shittier. I just am loving the word shit right now. I don't know why. But, you know, we'll see what happens this week with Orange Fuckface. Oh, wanted to, you know, of course, do my shout out. The Kill Me Now is produced by Laura Vogel, edited by Colin Schmeling, marketed and scheduled and everything else by Brittany Jo Sowards. Richmond, come see me in Rochester on May 3rd and 4th at the Carlson Club. Please, it's in a couple weeks. You need to get your asses out and come see live comedy, funny live comedy. What else do I have to tell you? Nothing really. I want to thank you all for listening. We recorded my new theme song for my new podcast. It's going to be the same, you know, it's going to be my podcast, but we're going to have a new theme song and a new name. Kill Me Now just is not cutting it for these times. And if you Google Kill Me Now, it's like for, you know, people who are wanting to take their own lives. So it's just not, you know, we grow and we evolve. So Kill Me Now is growing and evolving, but it'll still have me. And it's going to be fun and new and funner. Funner. Is that a word? Funner? More fun. That's all. I don't know what else to tell you. I do have upcoming news coming up. Oh, and I'm getting ready for Pesach. So, all the Jews who are getting ready for Passover, I feel your pain. And enjoy your bread this week, because you've got 8 days without it. Unless you don't observe, which is fine with me. Look, to each his own. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, that's it. Thank you all for listening. If anyone is listening to the end, I love you even more. Please come see me. Go to my website, judygold.com. Follow me on Twitter, not Twitter, X, whatever the fuck it's called. Like, it's so annoying. At Judy Gold, JEWDYGOLD, which has even more meaning today when I picked that name years and years ago. And I'm still a proud Jew. And that's the way it will always be. So thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful week. We'll be back here next week. And as we always say, so long.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy drugstore stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.